Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 19th of June, and I am recording at 9:32 p.m., and that's British summer time here in what was sunny London earlier today. Okay, so what's going on here? And this, not only today, but this being Friday, this is also the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. Well, first, just take let's let me just take a look at some of the highlights. Here today, Asia Pacific markets following Wall Street last night were mostly steady. There were two exceptions. One was Thailand, down 1.1%, and the big one though was China, and the China A shares were hammered down 6.42%. That's got to be their biggest decline in a good many years. And of course, that's coming after a loss of momentum and that following that very overextended rally to the upside. Now, this is a market that's heavily guided or managed by the party. The Communist Party, of course, and it'll be interesting, although this is their capitalist wing, and it'll be interesting to see if they just let this come rattling down. But certainly, we've seen a peak for at least the near term here, and it's probably a medium term consolidation, possibly lengthy medium term consolidation. The other indices are steadier, but they way underperformed on the upside. The Hang Seng index is actually up a quarter of a point in here today against that background, although the H share index was down just over half a percent. Elsewhere, again, we had mostly gains. Australia had a good gain, up 1.31% here today. From its oversold position. India also had its sixth consecutive day to the upside, having are bouncing off a low reached earlier in the month during what is often described as a lengthy medium term consolidation of its terrific gains that we saw last year and at the very beginning of this year. In the Asia Pacific markets now, and let me just see if I can get this. I've got a new keyboard and it's frustrating me here. And then, because I can't, it's got some different keys. Okay. Here we are looking at it was installed this afternoon. Now, about Bloomberg keyboard. Now, the European markets were mostly higher, although they paired gains. And Germany, which saw a decent rally early in the day, was up over 120 points, but it closed down half a percent, some 60 points. And again, Grexit fears were paring back those gains overall. More on Grexit in a minute. In the Americas, Wall Street, which hit new highs yesterday for the NASDAQ Composite Index and also the Russell 2000 Index, it couldn't extend those gains. It's had a pretty good week, but we saw declines of between a third of a percent to half a percent in the indices here today. The NASDAQ Composite getting the smallest one down just under a third of a percent. So a little late profit taking there. And looking elsewhere, let's see, the bonds, bond yield again, which I've described for over a week as being in a consolidation phase. And the high of that consolidation phase was just below the 250 level, you might remember last week. And from there, we got a downside key day reversal. And so signaling a consolidation. And that was lower in here today at 2.263%. My guess is that's not far from the lower side of the range that we're likely to see here. The VIX index, which I've been commenting on recently because we're in a corrective phase for most stock markets, that was slightly firmer at 13.86. 13.86. Now, the dollar index, to start with that, just a little bit firmer, but it's still at 94.12 and has a downward bias here overall. Not much going on. Sterling, steady-ish at 1.5873. The Australian dollar gave up a little bit of its recent gains, 0.7773. The euro gave up a tiny bit, 1.1350 as I speak, still trading here after hours. And I think those Asia Pacific currencies, including the Indian rupee, they're firmer in here today for the most part. One of the weaker currencies has been the New Zealand dollar, but as looking certainly getting somewhat overextended here overall, I feel. Okay. Now, let's move on to the big picture, starting with stock markets. First thing I would point out is, and repeat the point, that we are in the unfavorable, or perhaps I should say less favorable, period of the year. And that is the 6 months from May through October, which on average considerably underperforms the 6 month period from November through April. So that's the overall background. We don't expect that all that much weakness if we're not in a bear market, and we're not in a bear market. We are in a corrective phase overall, and a number of those corrections in Asian markets and European markets have extended to over 10%. The two stock markets still showing clear evidence of Teflon here. In other words, resisting, excuse me, much of the sell-off are Japan. Now, Japan was soft yesterday, coming off its highs and a little bit of a correction, but it was firm here today. And there's a strong belief that we're going to get continued QE, lots of monetary accommodation. That's pretty much a given, and that's certainly a bull factor for Japan. The other market that is doing extremely well overall is Wall Street, and that's despite the strong dollar, although it has certainly benefited from that dollar strength being pared back. Remember that dollar index was up over 100, I believe, just two a couple of months ago, or just over two months ago. It's up over 100, and it's at 94 here today. And if that goes lower, I maintain, and I think it will go lower, that will be bullish for Wall Street. It'll also be bullish for the global markets, as I've mentioned on a number of occasions overall. Now, what are we likely to see with this corrective phase going on? I think where we see corrections of over 10%, those markets start to look really as quite interesting being in accumulation zones. It doesn't mean that you pile in a big way, but it does mean that one can go in and nibble in those markets. And well, we've seen a number of those in that situation. The Grexit factor. Is Greece going to leave the EU? Is it going to somehow get a deal cobbled together and stay in? And that's a boring story, or at least it's a boring story for me, and I'd be surprised if you weren't a bit bored with it. But that is still an influence, a big influence on sentiment. Obviously, mostly in Europe, but it does extend beyond, and that's going to drag on into next week. I mean, my own view is that the EU would be better off without Greece. I don't think Greece would be better off outside of the EU, but that's very debatable. Depends on its governance. Would the left-wing government remain for long? Probably not. But given good governance and a Grexit, I think it would be a less traumatic devaluation and then gradual recovery. But they have a very left-wing government, and it always raises an eyebrow with me, to put it mildly. Okay, now which markets? Well, what about going beyond this seasonal period that I mentioned? It would be fair to assume that we will see a bit more of to the correction. It won't affect all markets in the same way, and those that have already seen reactions of 10% or more are probably less susceptible to additional weakness, unless, and this is an important caveat, unless they have a government that is highly suspect. With these markets, it's a global beauty contest, and if you've got an irresponsible, unpopular government, then that is certainly going to hold that market or those markets in check. But my feeling is that looking further ahead, the markets that are likely to do best, let's say over the next 12 months, I would have among big markets, I'd have Japan in there. I'd also have most of Europe. I'll accept Greece out, but most of Europe, and pick up Germany in there, because those are two countries, regions, the European region and the Japan nation, where we have quantitative easing. And whether quantitative easing is a big plus in the long term or less so, that's a debatable point, but we do know that it is very good for stock markets, and that's hardly surprising, and that's one of the reasons governments resort to QE, to get stock markets up in an effort to improve confidence and help to stem downside risk and get the economy moving once again. It sort of works, and it certainly works very well in terms of getting stock markets higher. So those would be my choices if you're looking around and wondering where to buy. And I also think China, although I don't know if China has shifted its monetary policy, it's such a managed market that we've really got to stay on side with what the government is actually doing. And the government was very happy to promote big gains in those Chinese stocks after they had lagged for quite a long period. I think I don't think the government has done a U-turn on this, but they appear quite happy to let a good correction take place in the A-share index, and that's probably no surprise. But the valuations that you get in the H-share index and the HSI index, those are the two main Hong Kong indices, are extremely attractive on a global basis. Now, why's Wall Street stayed so steady in here? I think it's natural advantages. It has the most autonomies, although they have not been leading the way to the upside for the most part here recently. But it's also got a booming tech sector. It's the world leader in technology. And I think what's fascinating about this is that It was quite fashionable for people to be saying in the 1990s, even in the 1980s, they were starting to say this. And also a little after 2000, saying that the USA was losing its technology lead and that China would take over in that department, and other countries were coming up fast, particularly some of the other Asian countries. Well, that hasn't happened at all. I mean, those countries, China and other countries, have been developing, but the U.S. certainly got a major second wind in terms of its overall technology sector. And so it's actually, instead of having its lead whittled away, it's actually extended its lead in most departments, and none more so than biotechnology. Which has just been roaring ahead. You know that biotechnology index, which people have been saying, well, it looks like a bubble. I've been saying that for at least a couple of years. And sure, it's such a huge performer that it's hard not to make the bubble comment. But it consolidates its gains and remains on the left side of its rising 200-day moving average. And again, is continuing to push higher. So that won't go on forever, quite obviously. And when it finally does peak, and I'm not holding my breath, but when it finally does peak, it won't get a horizontal consolidation. It'll get a sharp reaction. But my own feeling, and I think I've said this before. I know I've said this before, but that biotechnology is really at the was very much in the liftoff stage in terms of its potential development of very new and exciting products, and that applies to so much of the broader technology industry. So everything from biotechnology to industrial technology. We're getting this explosive growth rate. This has been a big theme of mine for a number of years, that we are in an accelerated rate of technological innovation, and all you have to do is actually look at what has changed in your lifetime, and then also look at what's changed technologically in the last 10 years. So that rate of change is speeding up. It's almost a visible change in technology that we're actually seeing. And in ex really exciting areas such as solar, solar energy area, I mean, hardly a day goes by without seeing some sort of new positive development in solar power. So this is unbelievably exciting, and this is why the United States is really, really very, very firm still. Now, I think that I've described this period not only in terms of less favorable seasonal time of the year, but also that we were prone to 2 or 3 years of possibly 4 years of a little bit more choppy activity for markets generally. Again, they won't all do the same thing, but most of them will have a somewhat choppy future. That's not terrifying. That's not something to sell out and hide behind the sofa because of. It's just inevitable, because as the valuations get higher, then that does encourage a little bit of volatility. And then something I'll referred to for years is say that this transition back to a normalization of interest rates, it really hasn't begun yet. But it's probably going to begin in September, or if not September, in December, with the U.S. making a first quarter point interest rate hike from the Fed. But this is a process that will take place over the next few years as global GDP growth picks up. And that will cause markets to jump around a little bit more. As I say, not something to be terrified about, but one of the things that I think we do have to consider is that you want to be careful about paying up for things unless you're buying on momentum in what is a really powerful trend, biotechnology, for instance. But for the most part, you want to look for those corrective phases that occur within markets and within sectors as providing the, particularly when you get pullbacks back to 200-day moving averages, which appear to be holding. Those are generally the favorable buying opportunities. And if something goes too far ahead, it's not a bad idea to lighten positions somewhat. Now, looking further ahead still, I think the prognosis for a secular bull market, and I've been talking about that, well, I can't really remember. It's been since at least 2010. I've been talking about the prospects for a secular bull market after we had those two really big setbacks in that long valuation consolidation phase in markets. And the drivers of that secular bull market, well, you won't be surprised to hear me say technology again. That's the really big one. And then also more affordable energy than we saw a few years ago. And we already are seeing in that more affordable energy period. And I think that's a permanent change. Energy prices will fluctuate inevitably, but we're not going back to big bubbles in the oil market. And oil will become steadily, well, it'll gradually lose its importance overall. It'll still be in use for a very, very long time, but we won't be held to ransom by OPEC, for instance, as far as energy prices are concerned. Okay, what about some of these other markets? Well, a very different story, I feel, is likely to unfold for bond markets, particularly government bond markets. And I've said I think the U.S. secular bull market is over. And I received an interesting and challenging letter on that point, which I was very happy to receive and answer. I posted it yesterday, if you haven't seen it. But how could I be saying that since it wasn't confirmed? There wasn't much technical evidence. Well, I think there is some technical evidence, but there are other factors as well. And by the time you get clear technical evidence that everyone can see, then you know a move is really well underway. And it'll be a long way off its highs or lows. But the non-technical reasons here, some of them again to repeat very quickly. I feel that in these next few years, get as we see this normalization process of interest rates causing a choppy market environment. But we can only normalize interest rates if we are avoiding the long Japan deflation, stagflation environment that plagued it for such a lengthy period of time. And the global economy is getting back to a more normal GDP growth rate. Will it be normal in terms of what we were seeing in the 80s or 90s? Well, probably not in a number of respects. I think we'll get some really quite strong growth, and a lot of people have almost given up on that. But you know my point that credit crisis recessions take a long time. Well, it takes a long time to recover from a credit crisis recession because you get so much deleveraging and re-regulation and so on that we're seeing in the financial sector. You know that story pretty well by now, I'm sure. But we are at the stage now where individually rather than all at once, we should see countries beginning to pick up in terms of their GDP growth. For instance, I feel quite strongly that the United States will be stronger during the second half of the year, certainly than we've seen during the first half of the of the year overall. So that is a recipe for higher government bond yields, and they're coming off those record low yields overall. And I think that the best in terms of just maintaining low yields, the best we can hope for is that we get a very lengthy type 3, that's with lots of churning, ranging time and size activity, a very gradual recovery in those government bond yields. But I don't think we can count on that always being the case. I think if when a secular bull market is over, by definition, you're entering a secular bear market, and therefore we will see some spikes in yields. We won't get anything like the early 1980s when we had all the inflation pressures. We're in a very different environment here today, not least because of technology. That's the main factor that will create a positive deflation, and it'll keep wages growth down, as we as we know as well. Although wages will pick up with job shortages as new industries develop, and also as GDP growth picks up. But we won't have a real problem, I think, in terms of wage prices, which we would see during the 1980s and 1990s. So that secular bear market in government bonds, I'd be very careful in that area. Matter of fact, I'd avoid it. And I know that some of you listening to this audio, you've done exceptionally well in that market for a very lengthy period of time. But if you know your market history, you know that these secular bull markets don't go on forever. And they can go on for 20, 30 years or more. But when they end, they usually end badly. So that's a risky area. I don't think stock markets have to worry too much about a bearish bond environment until we start to see those 10-year yields push up above 5%, and then we'll be getting into a danger territory. So much for the government bonds. What about currencies? I think we can expect a bull market overall for the U.S. dollar, but having seen the first upward leg of that U.S. dollar bull market, we know that the Fed and just about everybody else would like to see the dollar lower, and the United States corporate sector would like to see the dollar lower for the most part. These tend to be very gradual. Over 30, 40 years, you get a secular bull or a secular bear in a currency. That's what happened to the dollar on the downside, and it's going into the secular bull on the upside, and that will be a very gradual step sequence process overall. And the countries that are likely to have the strongest currencies will be the ones that are most industrialized, and particularly leaders in fields like technology. And that would include Japan, but its currency was so strong for so long that I don't expect that to be taking off or going up strongly at the yen to be taking off. I don't expect that anytime soon. But as a general rule, the countries that are a little bit stronger in terms of their industrialization and technology, will have firmer currencies more often than not. It's just a very general rule of thumb. Obviously, watching what the charts are doing will be hugely important in assessing those markets. Now, what about commodities overall? The really big change is the peak in energy prices, and that we're in a world with lower energy prices, and that will contribute to a secular bull market led by Wall Street that I've been talking about for a very, very long period of time, led by technology, and technology also producing the lower energy prices that we are now enjoying. Those are secular changes. I don't think we'll see any more oil spikes, and oil price spikes, in other words, to the upside. Now, industrial commodities is a fascinating situation. They are extremely depressed. That's partly due to lower demand, but here also technology, this is the positive side of deflation. Technology is a huge factor because miners are able to produce so much more efficiently and effectively. And this is everything from locating resources on green sites to tracking and where the which way the seams are actually flowing. We've always known about that or been able to follow that, but they're better, even far better at doing that. To a largely mechanized mining sector. 10 years from now, I think there'll be very few people involved in industrial mining in a big way. And so it's an incredibly efficient industry, and that does help to keep prices downwards. So overall, generally, we're not going to see inflation taking off anytime soon. It's in my view that inflation is not going to be a problem during this secular bull market, as it was during the last secular bull market. I'm talking about the next 10 to 20 years. And so that's energy, industrial metals. What about precious metals? Reasonable value in here today, but these are again the same technological advantages that can increase production for industrial metals can do the same and is doing the same for precious metals. So I think I'd want to be careful. I don't think one needs to be rushing into precious metals if you wish to have a 5% of your portfolio in that sector, and I certainly wouldn't contemplate much more. They're at a stage of their cycle where I think one can nibble on weakness, but don't pay up for them. I certainly would not pay up for them, at least not until they are in very, very clearly defined overall upward trends, and we're far from that here. Here right now, agricultural commodities. Last but not least, they have are benefiting, I should say, from a second consecutive year of favorable growing conditions. I know the year's less than half over, but it's been favorable so far. Obviously, this summer through to early autumn will be important in Europe and also in North America in terms of crops. What about climate change factors? Well, if we're getting a little bit of global warming, and I think we are, for whatever the causes, that is producing a little bit more rain for the most part. We obviously have drought pockets. And that's a problem in India, from India to California. It can be a problem, not to mention the Middle East. But certainly, if there is a tendency towards slight gradual global warming, that would suggest a little bit more rain historically on a global basis than we have seen in earlier decades, and that really should be favorable for crops more often than it's negative for crops overall. And the big variable in agricultural commodities is always going to be production. In terms of demand, that tends to grow on a gradual basis year after year. But it's the production that gets the bigger volatility, and I'm not going to make long-term weather forecasts on that. Okay, well, I think that pretty much covers the subject. So it's just time for me to say thank you very much for your interest. All the very best. Have a fantastic weekend. I'll be posting Ian Little's a presentation, and it's a good one, well worth looking at here tonight. And make sure you don't miss David Brown's presentation, which I posted last night. That is really a keeper for you and your children and grandchildren. And on that note, all the very best to all of you.